we were not gonna pass you again.
Lawson.
Yes, sir.
Let's go, man.
Yes, sir.
Dude, I'm telling you, we've been excited about this. I thought we lost you when we moved up, and I'm excited to get you here. We're excited to get you here. We got a heck of a foundation growing, man. It's gonna be fun. Feel me?
Yes, sir. I can't wait.
All gas, brother. Let's roll, man. Hey, I'm.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Joined by a very special guest today of PFF, Mike Renner. Mike, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. Appreciate you having me on here, Will.
Yeah, no, we're excited. We're if you're just listening and not watching the video version, I'm in USC gear specifically to piss off Mike. Mike's in his Notre Dame gear. Probably inadvertently pissed me off, but it happens.
Yeah, it's not to piss anyone off. It's just I just wear this every day.
That's fair. I could have gone the Cortland stuff, but I went the USC route. But obviously, exciting time of year from a lot of perspectives. Schedule just dropped. We've gotten the draft. Kind of pretty much the draft buzz is kind of cooled off a little bit at this point. But OTA starting up, and obviously the Jets were a polarizing team this offseason, this draft specifically, and I know that's where a lot of your focus is. What were your initial takeaways from the draft as a whole, and then we'll get a little more specific in some of the guys. But as a whole, how did you kind of feel the Jets did? I know you graded them pretty highly.
I mean, they got great players. Like, they got three guys in PFF's top 25. And as much as we like to, you know, glorify steals and, like, guys later on, it's like, oh, I like that guy that got in the fourth. It's those top 50, those top 100 picks that knocking those out the park matters the most. And I think they got three potential blue chip type of dudes at, you know, and obviously their first three picks there. And that's, those are the needle movers. That's what ultimately defines your draft. And so we can haggle about how much, you know, they gave up to go get it, but they got three damn good players. Like, I don't think there's any argument about that. And that's it. That's a change for most Jets drafts.
Yeah, no, that's the interesting one. I'll ask you about Wilson in a minute, but obviously the biggest topic, and I know this has been kind of a huge debate, whether it's PFF, it's people in the analytics community versus people that are, you know, how highly to value a guard. And I was a fan of the trade up for AVT only because, A, biasly, I was happy to get another USC guy. Once you lose Sam, you need to backfill him with another USC guy. But I feel like Elijah Vera Tucker, if needed, could be a tackle long-term at right tackle. I don't think that's his best spot, but I think there's some flexibility there. So I was a little less concerned with giving up the 2-3s there. How'd you kind of feel in the trade? Like, how good does he need to be to justify that trade for you?
Yeah. So that was the thing about the trade. It was, you're sitting at 20, it was a 24 prior to that in a deep offensive line class. And so you didn't have one hole along your offensive line. You didn't have one hole in that roster, like, to begin with. You had a lot of holes. It was probably, just in terms of, like, overall complete talent, the worst in the NFL. Actually, there's no sugarcoating it. That's why they were drafting second overall. And so you had a lot of positions that should be addressed. And now the draft isn't the only way to address them. They obviously hit a few in free agency. But to go and get, say, we will address this one position, and for it to be guard, which, you know, in our opinion, it's probably a bottom three value position in the NFL. It just, it's not saying it's completely invaluable. Like, that's going to make an impact on your football team, but other positions on the football field make bigger impacts. There's just no denying that. So to give up that much to do it, questionable, but the player you got, there's no debating that Elijah Vera Tucker is going to be a damn good guard. Like, he just is. So you kind of paid for certainty when a lot of times in the draft, we say there's not a lot of sure things. They obviously saw it as a clear tier between Elijah Vera Tucker and then the next offensive lineman in terms of how good that guy, knowing how good that guy is going to be. And so they paid for it, which I can't hate too much on, because, like I said, like, draft is a crapshoot. But I think with Elijah Vera Tucker, how good he's been at both guard and tackle, I don't think that's much of a crapshoot then at that point.
Yeah, no, and a lot of people picked up the Oregon game late in the year as, like, his, oh, look, see, he's like, this is why he can't be a tackle. And I was like, yeah, that guy's going to be a top three pick in the draft next year. Yeah, so, like,
that one really is. I kept going back. And I'm like, yeah, that would be why. Like, that would be why, but it's not enough. Like, the Kayvon Thibodeau, the Oregon defensive end, is doing that to everyone. You know, it's not, not unique to Elijah Vera Tucker. He's going to be doing that to guys in the NFL then next year in 2022. So that's not a unique problem for him to have. I don't really think that that's, like I said, if you really want to play him a tackle, I don't think they're going to, but if you really want to play a tackle, he definitely can.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you from that perspective. Obviously, you know, I feel like it got lost because Wilson was going to be a pick for so long that we kind of almost glossed over that on draft day. It was exciting, but everyone was like, oh, who are they going to go at 23? What are they going to do at 34? Do you like Wilson as much as the Jets did? Like, would you have taken him at 2, or would you have gone Fields or Lance or in a different direction?
Yeah, Wilson was 2 on the PFF draft board. I do think his arm and basically like his playmaking ability is special. It's different than what Fields brings to the table. He's a lot like Fields is the better, you know, tested athlete. I think his Wilson's athleticism plays better on a football field. It plays better into making plays in the passing game than Fields does. And they're both, you know, exceptionally talented with their arm accuracy perspective, whatever. But I just think Fields is a little more confident and creative and can make plays on his own. Whereas Fields was a lot of in structure, ball where it has to go, and nothing wrong with that. I just think what Wilson does is what's winning in the NFL today more and more.
Yeah, no, and I think something that, and we kind of obviously transitioned a lot of the stuff with Sam, and like I did, obviously everyone knows I defended Sam forever. The Jets also didn't do a great job. Sam did not play well, especially 2020 was just like, it was bad, even biasly was bad, but they didn't surround him with any type of talent from not just an offensive line perspective, which the offensive line was a little better last year, was still pretty bad. The receiver position, I have my two guys I'd mocked every single time over and over. And obviously I abused the PFF mock draft simulator over and over like everybody else. But we were Elijah Moore and Elijah Vera Tucker were the two guys. I was like, I feel like these are just such good scheme fits. Was Elijah Moore the guy for you that you were like, all right, now like, even if Elijah Vera Tucker is a guard, which I agree with you in terms of a value perspective, it's not, you don't have to be as quite as good of an athlete to play guards. You tackle in the NFL and things like that. Elijah Moore is exciting. I don't know that the Jets have had a guy like that in quite a long time. So,
oh, he's awesome. I couldn't believe he fell out of the first, to be honest. I just thought, you know, if Jalen Waddle can go 6 and who's fairly similarly sized, and yeah, he's probably a little more, obviously a little bit more athletic. Like Jalen Waddle can go 6 in today's NFL. Like Elijah Moore's a top 20 type of player, in my opinion. He's that good as a route runner, that good at ball skills. Like I see him as having a very high floor. Like at the very worst, he's an awesome slot receiver. And I think he could be more than that. And so they obviously already have the guys on the outside, Corey Davis and Denzel Mims. Those are outside type of wide receivers. But I think he can be, you don't have to just plug him in the slot and say that's his role. I think he'd be far more than that.
Yeah, no, he's going to be an exciting player. And I think, again, it's like the draft. Douglas is pretty consistent now. I think through 2 drafts, we can say, like, if you're not a team captain, the Jets probably aren't taking you. If you opt out or get injured, you're probably also not getting taken. A couple of the guys that were polarizing to me were their decision to not go defense till round 5, and then they just take, like, 500 different corners that graded out well. Are there any of those later round guys, people have kind of gravitated towards Michael Carter, the second Michael Carter. Are there any of those guys that stick out to you? You're like, oh, there could be an interesting pick, or we're all kind of like, I take it or leave it. Maybe they'll be okay.
The corners or any of them?
I mean, any of them. I know, like,
I really like Michael Carter. I mean, the running back Michael Carter, to get him at the 4th. Like, he produced at the same level as Javonte Williams did. But yeah, Javonte Williams is the better, like, projectable athlete, better size, younger. But I think, like, the fact that they both produced, like I said, at the same level, Carter even had more big plays and was the one who was featured more in the passing game. It's like 2 rounds difference is a big difference draft capital-wise to get a guy who, like I said, produced at the same level. And he's a high-level athlete, NFL caliber running back in his own right. So I think – to not have to, when everyone's saying, oh, maybe they draft ETN in the 1st round, maybe they draft one of those guys at the turn there at the top of the 2nd, to not have to wait until all the way in the 4th and get a guy who, you know, was wide receiver 4, or excuse me, running back 4 on the PFF draft board. I thought that was one of the best value picks, especially at the running back position in the draft.
Well, finish on the Jets real quick. I just want to get your take quickly. The Jags stuff's like super concerning to me. Like I feel like we're not talking about it enough all year. Like, they blatantly like lost 15 games in a row and everyone's like, oh, the Jets are tanking, they suck. It's like, dude, the Jags are doing it like on purpose and like we're just not talking about it. I know it's Jacksonville versus New York and the Jets are very good clickbait and all that stuff, but the ETN comments, and maybe it's just Urban like maybe not realizing the NFL is going to pick everything, they're concerning. Like, he was like, I'm just going to take Tony there, and was like, ah, screw it, I'll just take Etienne because he's a familiar name. Like, that's Tebow stuff aside, this is a little weird.
Yeah, Meyer transitioned to the NFL is like, it's been it's felt like he didn't quite have a feel for the landscape of the NFL and how it all worked. And just like to get Etienne, it just felt like, yeah, like you said, like, oh, I wanted Tony. Oh, well, who's the next guy in that mold that I wanted to get my offense? And I like what he's done saying we're going to, you know, train him as a wide receiver. And I always thought like offensively and how he schemes to his talent and whatnot, like, I think that part will work. But the team management part, I think they gave him maybe a little too much influence into that when it really was, you know, like, it's not, the draft is not recruiting. It is a vastly different sort of world that I think he's maybe treating a little bit like recruiting.
Yeah, no, it's, I think sometimes people forget that's what makes the NFL and college so different. And that's why certain guys have transitioned really well. I think Pete Carroll and guys like that obviously have done a great job, and other guys have failed because you don't get to, like, just because you are who you are. Nick Saban's probably the best college coach ever. I'm sure people could have that debate. I think it's kind of over at this point. He wasn't that great in the NFL. I mean, it wasn't like I can walk in the room and I'm Nick Saban and my personality is going to bring the next 35 guys to Alabama.
Yeah, but I mean, Carroll, what was that? It was a second year, or first year. He's got Taylor Mays there and drafts Earl Thomas, you know, coming out.
That really pissed off Taylor Mays and pretty much went from a guy that I was like, oh, he's going to be a stud. And then he just basically sucked for 5 years with the Bengals and move on. But were there any guys that the Jets brought in? They brought in a couple of polarizing names. Kenny Ebo out of Ole Miss was a name at tight end. People thought they might go tight end during the draft. Do you think any of those guys kind of stuck out to you? I think he's the name that most people have kind of gravitated to, that, oh, he'll make the roster and he might start because Chris Herndon stinks. But I don't know if that's necessarily realistic, but I think he might be able to make the roster. I don't see why not.
Oh, you're going to have to prompt me on some of their UDFAs.
Yeah, no, there's a couple. Kenny Ebo at Ole Miss, tight end, was a guy. There just seems like there's a couple names to me that stuck out. I'll bring them up right here for you. I don't know if I can let's see if we can go through them. Oh, yeah, Isaiah Dunn, another one at Oregon State, another corner. I feel like corner's a spot. Anybody, if they can just play decently. And then Rashad, defensive end out of Oregon State, was the other name. Those are the three names to me that stuck out. Any of those guys?
Yeah, Amilcar is interesting. So he had a bunch of sacks the year prior, and he's super quick, but he was undersized and really had to put on a ton of weight. And now he ended up actually putting it on by his pro day, but was injured this past year. So people were higher on him coming into 2020. If he would opted out, he probably gets drafted, honestly. He hasn't put on tape what he did this past year. So, that'd be one guy I say is interesting, at least because he has, I think, some physical tools to succeed at the NFL level. I think the other one is Tristan Hoge. I think he got hurt also this past year, but he took a massive step forward at BYU his last season, or his last like season and a half from what he was early in his career. I think he started actually at Notre Dame and then transferred over there. So,
the Jets are going to be an interesting, interesting team going forward, but. Some of the other teams, I was just curious, like how you felt, how maybe the rest of the AFCs did. I think it's a division that's obviously got four, hopefully Sal is going to be good for everything. The signs point to him being good, but it's four really strong defensive head coaches. Do you like specifically, I think Miami is a team that stuck out during the draft. I'm not super high on Mac Jones, so I don't love New England's draft, but how do you feel about the kind of the AFC's draft as a whole?
I thought the Patriots, I mean, I love their second and third rounders in Barmore and the Oklahoma kid, whose name's escaping me off the top of my mind, but those two, I like those picks. And I think the Dolphins, I like their draft this year a lot better than it was last year. Now they have to be kind of kicking themselves. I think, I don't know, it came out that they had Jalen Waddle as the number two player on their board. Whatever, you're obviously going to say that after the draft, but they have to be kicking themselves a little bit, giving up a first rounder when they could have just given up a little bit to get Devontae Smith, who ends up going 10. Like, the Eagles win that trade wholesale if you're just comparing apples to apples there. So that one's a little bit of a mess, but I still like what they did. On the whole, like I thought this team that last year drafted a lot of projects after you know, Tua. You draft Austin Jackson, who's only 20 years old. No way, Benogany, only 20 years old. And those guys really struggle out the gate. Thought they needed more sure things kind of this year. And I think that's Javon Holland. I think that's Liam Eikenberg. Maybe they're not swings for the fences, but those guys are going to be good players. You can feel pretty confident about that. So I like what they did this year a lot better than last year. And then the one head scratching draft on me was the Bills. Like, defensive end 1 and 2 after going defensive end with your first pick last year and AJ Epenesa. And none of them, none of those three are still starting. You still got, you know, Mario Addison and Jerry Hughes there. So it's a, obviously a valuable position. You always need pass rushers. They can always kind of see the field, but man, like a weird sort of how those draft boards fell for the Bills. Like, I don't think this makes them better. Like, I don't think they're any better in this upcoming season. And looking around that roster and kind of just like, where's the improvement coming from for them? Cause they didn't really add much in free agency either.
Yeah, no, they're a team that I think everyone assumes is going to be great. And I'm not saying the Bills are not going to be great, but they still need to take that step, I think, to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender, not just a team that's really, really good. And they just didn't love the picks either. Maybe I'm being, you know, harsh, but no, I agree with you on the Pats and Miami as well. I didn't love Austin Jackson at USC, and I didn't think he was going to be, I thought he was going to struggle right away. And if I'm watching a guy that I'm rooting for and he's already struggling, like yeah. you kind of take it out of, you know, out of context. But is there any other teams across the league that you felt like hit really big in the draft? Obviously we have to wait and see if they actually pan out, but they hit really big, or other teams that you were like, I don't know if you kind of missed value wise on what you maybe should have been taking.
Value wise. That's the Raiders, like MO.
The Raiders are so confusing, man. I don't get it with Gruden and Mayock. I don't even know what's going on. I feel the longer Gruden's there, the worse it gets.
Dude, like they don't, it's just, there's no plan is the biggest thing. And like every decision, it's all short-term decisions. It feels like that they're making and treating the draft like a short-term decision is just bad. It's just bad process. And I think like the one that I just saw again today that reminded me of how bad like they've been is the Lynn Bowden pick from last year. Top, I think it was an 81 or 82 overall. A top 90 pick in the draft is a valuable pick. And to just wash it down the drain as soon as you draft that guy, trade him away. It's like to scout that guy that badly that you're trading him away, to not know his skill set that's poor process. And so yeah, the Raiders are just in a bad way. The team I'll say that I thought had a really good draft that I think is like scary now in the AFC is the Browns. They got cornerback and Greg Newsome, who I thought was right up there with J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain for like quarterback one possibility in this draft. Linebacker and Jeremiah Uzukoramoa, obviously he fell for like a heart issue rumored whatever, but that's apparently not even an issue anymore. So to get those two guys, both top 20 players, the PFF draft board is like, damn, they got, and they already add a lot in free agency this offseason too, to where a defense on paper, at least it's like a top three defense in the NFL.
Yeah, no, the Raiders are so confusing to me because I feel like they trade or cut their entire offensive line, which was probably the strongest part of their roster, and then go and draft an offensive lineman who is like second. I mean, I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player. I don't know that for a fact, but I just don't think he's that big of a needle mover. Yeah, and then it's like why trade the rest?
Better than Gabe Jackson if he plays guard. He's not going to be better than Trent Brown if he plays tackle right away. So it's like
you also just could have had both. Like you could have literally had both. Like you didn't have. There was no reason to choose. And they were like, oh, we're going to cut Rodney Hudson, but then we're going to actually try to trade him now. And it's like none of that stuff. It just feels very dysfunctional. And opening a nightclub in your end zone is also, you know, whatever. That's a whole nother thing. But no, I agree with you. I agree with you like on that as well. The Browns, I wanted JOK and the Jets. I feel like he would have been like a perfect solid player. Look, I'm pumped we got Elijah Moore, and I'm not going to complain about it, but I honestly would have packaged 2 threes to go up and get JOK too. They have no weeks at linebackers that are like established yet. So kind of wanted to get your real quick on, we'll finish up with that stuff, but who are a couple guys that you're looking forward to early 2022 draft that, you know, obviously we don't know where the Jets are going to be picking and we don't know, you know, how things will shake out, injuries, all that stuff. Who are a couple of names, Derek Stingley Jr. and Kayvon Thibodeau seem to stick out, and I'd be happy to have them on the Jets. I would prefer them not to be drafting the top five, but who are a couple of prospects fans should watch out for this fall that you think, all right, these guys are going to be special and we're going to be talking about them for the next 12 months?
I think there's a guy from Georgia named Adam Anderson, who's a former five-star, who – so I'm going back and watching the tape of him or this because I did my 2022 mock and he put him in the first round. Him and Aziz Ojulari when they're both on the football field. Aziz Ojulari is like, you know, he's an undersized guy, known for like kind of a speed rusher in his own right. And this dude's a yard up past him when they're both going speed rush. Like that guy gets off the line of scrimmage and he's like 6'5", 240 or so. Like he's got juice and that at his frame, like he, all he needs to do is put on some muscle and this guy will be a stud in my opinion. So Adam Anderson, obviously he was only a part-time player there last year, just a sub package rusher, but interested to see what he does. The other guy I got to highlight, Notre Dame shirt on, Kyle Hamilton, probably their best prospect since, gosh, I mean, Quinn Nelson, probably. Like this guy is a surefire stud. Basically, how I like to describe him is he's Isaiah Simmons if Isaiah Simmons just stayed at safety and didn't get bigger. Like he is 6'4", 220, and with range, can make plays on the football, a versatile dude. There hasn't been, gosh, who was the last safety really drafted? I think Jamal Adams really drafted highly. I think he'll be the next guy at safety drafted highly.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th. I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I was just thinking about Quentin Nelson. When people bring up AVT, they're not the same player in any way, shape, or form. And I don't want people to get out of context there. Yeah. But everyone's like, well, what if he's Quentin Nelson? Like, well, if he's Quentin Nelson, the Jets are going to be awesome. Like, that shouldn't be his comp because you're kind of setting someone up for failure if you're the best guard in the NFL as a rookie.
Quentin Nelson's tape was different. Like, there hasn't been a Quentin Nelson since Quentin Nelson. So
yeah, there's one of them. That's why I got taken in the top six as a guards. But now I kind of wanted to see if you could walk people through a little bit. PFF is super interesting to me. And I think sometimes there's a lot of different people have a lot of different takes. There's a lot of different numbers to support what you're kind of going through. If you could kind of quickly walk through some of the process you go through on maybe a Saturday or a Sunday when you're watching a game and how you're going to evaluate a player versus maybe someone who's just, oh, look, this guy had 6 catches for 100 yards. He's awesome. Like, Mike, why don't you think he's as good as his numbers say?
So I don't like actually, like if I'm watching a game on TV, I try not to be like, oh, wow, like let it sway my opinion on a guy too much. Cause that's like, you're really an incomplete picture. You're like, the brain does get skewed by highlights. You know, natural bias to lean towards the guys who can make plays, but I like to watch guys like in totality. And so like my process would be, it's obviously not like a Saturday or Sunday, I'm just casually watching the games, but like then that rest of the week, really just like start to finish a game on a guy. If during the season, at least after the season, you know, I'll go to like cut-ups on all 22 of like certain situations where it's like, I want to see, you know, JC Horn in man coverage. I want to see what he can do. lot of cornerbacks just start with what they can do in man coverage because it's obviously a more valuable aspect. It's like, if you can't play man coverage, you're probably not going in the first round. It's just it's a fact of life in today's NFL. It's like what you got to do. So that's kind of my process is like in the, like I said, during the season, if a guy really had like a game where he put up big numbers or something, you go back and watch every play. But when I'm actually like going up and writing the reports, I want to see specific aspects of who they are. That, and nice part about being at PFF is all we have all the data to allow me to do that, to be like, oh, I want to see him in press coverage. Oh, I want to see this guy against press coverage. It's a wide receiver. I want to see this guy actually, you know, going one-on-one in pass protection. And we have the ability to like filter those out to see. And so it's not just like full slides doing nothing for a guy, which is like half a play for a lot of offenses.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. I just think sometimes there's that confusion between like the analytical side of things versus the all 22 side versus the more fan perspective, and everyone kind of, the guys that are great usually fall on the top level in all three categories and stuff like that. But
that's kind of like what I'm doing. It's like, I want all the boxes ticked for a guy. So like, that's how kind of we operate at PFF. It's not just, you know, the analytics, how they grade out. It's not just how athletic they are. And it's not just, you know, what the tape says. It's like, does this guy have all three? Because then, like when you have all three, not saying you're going to be like an awesome player, but I think it just gives you a high floor at that point. So you feel better about those guys.
That makes a ton of sense. One trending topic today on Twitter came out of PFF, the Randy Moss, Tyreek Hill thing. Where'd you fall on that? Where'd you fall on that argument? I know where I fall.
Well, I will say, I mean, Randy Moss is the best deep threat of all time. I don't think that Tyreek Hill is like unquestionably out of the conversation. Like I think Hill's faster. I think he is like a more explosive twitchier overall athlete. Obviously, like Randy Moss being so tall, obviously couldn't move laterally as quickly as Tyreek Hill does. His top speeds are similar. I mean, Tyreek Hill's fast as hell. Like that was Randy Moss' thing. He'd build up on you and then just be striding away from you and be like, holy shit. So, and obviously Randy Moss better at the catch point, but it's not, it was obviously a bad take, but I think Tyreek Hill, like he's top three, you know, he's gotta be like, that guy is different, moves differently than
he wasn't as bad. It wasn't as bad of a take as it's being made out.
No, it's bad because there's like, not really a debate. It's like, it is Randy Moss, but Hill's there, like Hill's below, like just below him. But it's like one guy was obviously the best. So there's no real debate whether it's Tyreek Hill or Randy Moss.
It kind of reminds me of right now of like the DeGrom, Jacob Cole. I mean, Jacob DeGrom, Garrett Cole thing, where it's like Garrett Cole's like pretty, like, sure, he's not, it's not ridiculous if you said that, but it's just like Jacob DeGrom's the best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
And just like accept it. Couple of more fun, I guess, non-football related NFL stuff. I wanted to ask you about two things and then we'll get to like the elephant in the room at the end.
Right.
The 40-yard dash. The confidence, you had so much confidence, and like there was so much hatred from your colleagues. Like, and then the dunk you posted on Instagram, I was super impressed. So, A, what got more traction, and B, how disappointed were you didn't run the 4.6?
I was pretty disappointed. I said 4.6 is, and honestly, like, I did nothing to prepare. My confidence was so irrational.
I would have been pretty shook if you ran 4.6. Like, to be honest with you,
I said like I could, but then like 2 months later, I was like, oh shit, I haven't even like sprinted in the last 2 months. Like I had done nothing. It was like over the summer, I had just like been, you know, doing what one does over the summer, which is nothing. So I was like, oh shit, we're actually doing it now. And so I was still like in all right shape. I like, was running, but not sprinting, which is like vastly different. So, and obviously I'd never practiced a start in my life, which is a big thing about that too. So yeah, I ran like 4.42, which is,
Still pretty good. Like, I feel like people like would see that and they're like, oh, well, like this person runs a 4.4. Like, yeah, they're in the NFL. That's pretty fast.
4.82, I was pretty disappointed. I would like to actually train for one at some point. I've got my years are getting up there. I'm 31 now. It's kind of ticking. I gotta get on it quick if I'm gonna run one. But the dunk though, yesterday I was still throwing down. That was a couple of years ago that I posted that one. I can still like windmill. I can't do that dunk anymore though. That was the reverse two-hander. That one was, I've only done that like four times in my life. So
yeah, no, that was, I saw the 40-yard dash video first. So I was like, all right, like, let's see, like, this dunk, like, I don't know, people post dunks all the time. Like, I used to do it on my Instagram too. And I was like, oh, that's like not that, that was like actually super impressive. Like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I tell people, I'm like, I could probably jump higher than any 6 foot white guy, you know, like, there's not a lot of 6 foot white guys out there that jump high. It's not a thing.
You should have done that on The Bachelorette. But basically, we had obviously people who listen to the pod. We had Kyle on last week, and he was talking a lot about his real world experience and people wanting to do the challenge and all this stuff. He basically said he wouldn't do it for any less than like high six figures. A, how is the experience on The Bachelorette? And B, do you find it more like funny and like entertaining at this point? Or is it like, dude, how many times are you going to ask me about the same question? Oh, my hair is different. I'm a different guy. Like,
no, it cracks me up still. Like you kind of take it for what it is. If you take it too seriously, you're a hardo. Like I just went out there to enjoy it. And honestly, it was kind of boring. Like there's so much downtime is what you don't see. It's like prepping the cameras. Like a lot of times you're just doing nothing and there's no internet, no phone, no whatever. And so the experience was awesome. Like the whole, like, it was super cool to look back on and be like, holy shit, I did that. But like actually being out there in a house with like 25 other guys was just like almost tedious at times. It was just like, dude, like, let me do something. Cause you're stuck there and not doing anything.
No, it's funny because I like your hair, obviously, if people don't know, is like totally different. And like, I feel like for whatever reason, everyone had long hair in that season. Like I went back and watched. I was like, that wasn't even like, you couldn't even stand out because your hair is pretty disappointing, to be honest.
Little man, my one thing. And then like my football thing, there were two football players on the season. I was just fucking like catching grenades left and right. I had nothing going for me. They don't even show me. I was like, I.
No, I was like, me and my brothers went back and watched. They grow their hair out of people. So, and they're like going in their junior season for footballs. They grew their hair out and they were like, oh, this is sick. Like, and I was like, yeah, I guess you missed your guys' chance like by 3 years. Yeah, could have gone back on. Do you still communicate with any people on the show, or is kind of just like, hey, like, we're all here for the same stuff?
Outside of like, you know, replying to someone's Instagram story. Not really. Last time I saw a guy was honestly over a year ago. So,
all right, that's fair. Last thing I wanted to hit on, obviously, I'm a USC guy. You're a Notre Dame guy. Rivalry is back. What's maybe your favorite, kind of memory of that rivalry, and where is USC rank in the terms of the teams you dislike in terms of like the Navies, the Michigans, the pretty much everyone Notre Dame's played seems to be a rival. So,
I just like Michigan a lot more, I'll say. USC, it's like they have like their niche and Notre Dame has their niche. So like they don't really overlap, but like Michigan's right fucking there. And they think they're like on par with Notre Dame in terms of like academically. It's like, no, you're not. Jesus. Like they hold themselves up. Like they turn their noses up at other state schools as if they're the shit. It's like, no, you're no different. Like, come on. So that one, I hate Michigan more. I'm trying to think my favorite USC Notre Dame memory. I remember saying my senior year, if they beat USC, it was at home, that I was going to jump in the, there's like a lake and like a pond in front of the library. I was going to jump in afterwards. And that was the game. I think Dane Crisp fumbled and it was like the 98 yard fumble return touchdown. And I was like, oh, such a bad game. I think that was that game.
That's like striking a bell. Like obviously the Bush push game like stands out for everybody, yeah. But like at the same time, I feel like that game could have gone either way and be the favorite game. But like the Adoree Jackson game really, that was probably like the biggest down season for Notre Dame I can remember in a long time. So I thought I would try to push the Adoree. It feels like the Julius Randle MVP push. Like he was never going to win the Heisman, but you kind of had this like underdog thing with Adoree. I actually hate Michigan more than I hate Notre Dame. And it was because as a kid, they played them in the Rose Bowl and smoked them a bunch. And they were just so arrogant. I don't know why.
Everyone hates Michigan. I think my favorite memory from Notre Dame, though, was it? I think it was end of they faced them last game of 2012 before they went to the national championship game. And then obviously just like winning that to get there was awesome. That was probably my favorite one.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll agree with that. I'm glad it's back. But obviously, if you don't follow Mike, I think to PFF Mike on Twitter, it's a lot of really good stuff. And I think if you go into reading stuff with numbers with the right mindset, I think the casual fan would enjoy it a lot more because you're not like you have to just take it with context. It's the same with baseball, same with basketball, all the analytics stuff. is meant for a reason. It's meant to give you more information and value somebody more. I'm speaking for you in that sense.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't write with like the purpose of being like the numbers telling you something. It's like, I see what I see and then I back it up with the numbers. Like
that's the way it should be.
Yeah. I'm not like, just like seeing, oh, this guy had a 75 overall grade. Let me punch that in and tell you he's good. It's like, no, like I watched tape. It's good. Here's what the data says that's good about him. So that's what I try to do.
Yeah, no, it's awesome stuff. And obviously we kind of hope the Jets draft is, you know, they'll be able to be in a better position where they're not the most talked about team during the draft in a good way.
I think they will have another first round pick next year.
So yeah, we have double first round picks and you package them, you go get Kayvon Thibodeau and we'll call it a day and we're pretty rocking and rolling. But no, we appreciate the time and we'll hopefully have you back on, later in the season. Maybe we'll do a USC Notre Dame week, pod.
Sure. You do that. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me. I will.